Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners go to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth.
Welcome into today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast. We talk all things money and business. I'm your host, Christian Allen. With me on the other line, Rodney the Pod Zabriskie. Rod, what's going on, man?
Hey, glad to be here. And I just want to say, so I had a really cool experience this past weekend where I got to hang out with a lot of our listeners. So our partner, Buck Joffrey, did kind of a meetup in Dallas, and so a lot of people were there. So it was really cool to hang out with them. They had great things to say about you and the podcast and kind of what we're doing
I'm
here.
I'm sure they did. So this is what's nice. Like, people always tell you to your face. Like, I have not heard anything but good things about our podcast. And yet, I mean, maybe I shouldn't complain. Like, we've had pretty solid listeners, but it's not like we're at the top of the charts, Rod. So there's probably some room for improvement.
Yeah, so we have to drill down. So I actually did ask for ideas, like, hey,
give us some good thinking.
So I added to our list of things that we could do. And shout out to Marnie Moore. She was particularly was helpful, gave us a good idea. So
awesome. Well, we'll take those into account, and we want to get the stuff out there that people want to listen to that will be helpful, and getting people to their goal of building whatever level of wealth they want to achieve.
Awesome.
That's what we want to be, a resource for that. Okay, Rod. Well, those are cool events. I'm sad that I missed it, and I'll try to beat it this next one. I think every year or so, Buck has those, right?
Yeah.
Maybe more frequently, but it's been a while because of the pandemic, so
yeah.
I'm sad that
two-year
hiatus.
One. Yeah.
Two-year hiatus. All right, well, cool. Well, thanks for giving us the update on that, Rod. Now, let me introduce our show topic today. So this one was kind of we decided that we're going to be a little bit more raw today, and we're going to be vulnerable, because we're going to talk about the lessons we learned from owning a day spa. So let me give some context for this, and Rod, you can add to or take from anything that I say here. But basically, the long and short is that we decided, it was about 3 years ago, is that right? 3 years ago? We decided to purchase a day spa where they do like aesthetics and massage and that kind of thing. It was a franchise day spa. And the reason we decided to go with a franchise is because we liked the idea of kind of like the turnkey model thing, right? Mm-hmm. We thought we could do that, be kind of absentee owners, but still, I mean, still involved, but not like day-to-day involved. And that was kind of the goal of that, of the setup that we had, right?
Plugging
into a system. Now, I won't go into the reasons why we decided to go like with that type of a business. I'm sure there's a lot of people scratching their heads and thinking, well, what was the reason behind that? And I will say this, like, there are a lot of strong indications for that business to continue and be really strong. In fact, the demand for it is extremely high right now.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we'll talk a little bit about that. Okay. But what I want to do is I want to focus on lessons that we learned from our time owning the day spa. And we do not own it anymore. We sold it 3 years in. We lost more money than we made, so we're just going to be open about it. But the good news is that we learned a whole bunch of lessons that we can take with us for the next round. Right?
Yes, we did. Lots learned.
Okay, so let's do it. So we wrote down 12 of them, and that's just a random number. But there's probably a whole bunch more, but as I was brainstorming and going through this, that's what I came up with. Rod was kind enough to come in and make some adjustments to some of them to hopefully make them a little better. So anyway, we're ready to roll. Let's do it, Rod.
I'm ready.
Number one, I hope people like lists, because that's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
And part of it's because that's how I like to listen to things. I like it to be broken down. And anyway, so, but again, we'll take thoughts and ideas. We want to make this something that's valuable, useful, and hopefully entertaining to listen to. Okay, back to the list. Number one, Rod, do twice as much due diligence as you think you need. And I'll start, and then you can take a turn on this. But the reason, or the biggest thing that came up as it relates to this idea was was the thought that we did a significant amount of due diligence, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like we just woke up one day and said, hey, let's go buy this business. We did look into it. We did a lot of research. However, as much as we did, we didn't do enough. Can we agree with that?
Agreed, yes.
Okay, so one example of this is we knew enough to understand that the industry as a whole was in very high demand. It was growing, right? It is growing, yeah. or has been. However, what I didn't know, Rod, was that the career force was not growing with it. So what ended up happening was really simple. We had high demand from customers and couldn't hire enough quality people to cover the demand. Right. And so obviously the business can't run if you don't have enough of the right people in the right place. And that was like one of those things that I look back and I'm like, how did we miss that? Right. So anyway, hopefully people, as they're listening to it, they'll think, okay, I'm going to do, if I'm getting into this, if I'm thinking about purchasing a business or starting a business or even my own business, things that I can learn and take to it. One of those things was that, you know, you should do twice as much due diligence. Okay. What do you think?
Yeah, one of the things that happened on specifically what you talked about is schools where they should have been growing and not just in number but in enrollment, they were shutting down. It made no sense. It made zero
that would have
sense.
Been and that would have been really smart for us to know going.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Okay, that's a good thought. Okay, so just and as a whole, this is important. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Well, yeah. One other thought. So what I've learned about myself in this, doing this and in other areas, I'm good at finding reasons to do something. And so we found enough reasons to do it, right? We did enough due diligence. We saw it, we lined it up, we felt good about it. And so we pulled the trigger. And what I'm trying to get better at is delving a little bit deeper, because a lot of the things that I become those reasons to do it come with certain assumptions. Well, take a step back and just make sure the assumptions are sound and then go from there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we could go on various tangents on, you know, different ways that this kind of principle might have bitten us a little bit.
Yeah.
But since we have 12 of them, I'm going to spare it and we'll keep moving on. Okay. Number two, Rod, you got to know your numbers. This seems really obvious. And I knew that going in. I knew, like, that was a focus. Christian, you've got to keep an eye on the numbers. Mm-hmm. Here's what I found is that was way more difficult than I anticipated. Now, here's the thing. Not every business is created the same. And this business was unique in the sense that, you know, some of the people who we employed were W-2 employees, and some of them were hybrid because they were specialists and worked on a, you know, a different type of pay scale and situation. Then you get all like the bonuses and commissions and all of the various things that come with it. And that's not even to talk about like the, you know, your profit margins, your KPIs, the overall revenue, like all of those things end up being super important. And here's my message on this. No matter how difficult it seems, like, don't be lenient on it. We learned, I think, the hard way that being lenient on numbers will bite you. And I think that was one of the challenges that we had.
Yeah, so one of the advantages of plugging into a franchise system is the system. As it relates to this specifically, what it brought with it was just some levels of complication as it relates to drilling down on the numbers that we didn't anticipate or really I think even to the end didn't really iron out in a way that made it useful for us.
Okay, Rod, number three. You know that I'm writing them just based on the way that they're kind of put out there. So I put hiring is dang hard. And hiring is dang hard. Now this applies no matter what business you're in.
It
so
is, yeah.
We just recently hired a new full-time marketing person. Mm-hmm. And can I just tell you, it has been, I don't know if excruciating is the right word, but like
painful in some
it
way.
It has definitely been painful to find the right people, good quality people. Part of it, I think, has to do with the timing. I know that we're in the pandemic and there's unique set of circumstances, but my experience in all of the business that I've been a part of up to this point is that hiring is really hard. And so the lesson is, well, I'll jump into number four here in a second, but before I move on to that, Rod, do you have anything to add on hiring is dang hard?
The more specialized the person that you need, the harder it becomes. Because we had people that we hired at the front desk, and not to say that what they did wasn't important, because it was extremely important. It was just
difficult. So yeah.
Yeah. It was just easier to get resumes from those people. Mm-hmm. And so we had a lot more to choose from anytime we were out hiring for that position. Whereas for example, a massage therapist, it's much more specialized, fewer people to choose from. And so you still want to be as picky as you need to be when you're hiring people. And yet you just know you can't be too picky. And so it really became a real issue.
Yeah, and it became extra hard specific to that industry. But here's the thing. Again, I have talked to, we had a business coach for a year or so. And, you know, we went to the business conference that he put on. And all of the businesses are having a difficult time hiring, just across the board. So the lesson, I'm not sure if that's a lesson, but that's just like I learned that hiring is dang hard. Therefore, it's a statement. Therefore, number four, always be recruiting. So maybe that's the lesson. The issue is that hiring is dang hard. Therefore, you have to always be recruiting. This is kind of funny. This shows my naivety, right? But it's kind of laughable thinking back on it. But I genuinely thought going into the spa business that the recruiting, I mean, I realized that there was a hiring process and you have to meet with people and stuff. What I didn't realize and what I actually thought was that I would just post a resume or post a job description on like Indeed and I would get resumes and we'd just hire the best people. Like that would be it. Simple, straight. Like I really thought that was going to be it. And the funny thing is, the first time that we put our job post out on Indeed, that's almost what it felt like. Like we got a bunch of people and I thought, oh, this is easy. Just like I thought.
Yeah.
Well, that did not continue. It did not continue. And so because it didn't continue, we didn't have at that point in time, the recruiting channels in place to kind of keep things where we needed them to be. So yeah, the hiring's dang hard. Therefore you should always be recruiting.
And even using the word recruiting maybe emphasizes what we learned because we didn't think of it as recruiting initially, right? It was just like you said, posting, getting people interested. And
we thought it would have been always be hiring, but it's much more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be proactive out there. And I'll show you my just embarrassing thing as I think about it now, when we were first getting trained and they said, well, you need to be involved with the schools.
Yeah.
Right. And specifically related to this recruiting. Well, I was off base enough at that moment. I thought they were talking about like, oh, we want to be like out having teachers and principals and administrators coming to get massages. Like
you weren't even thinking about like the massage therapy and aesthetic schools.
Right. Yeah. Those weren't even on my radar at that moment. And anyway, embarrassing moment.
Okay. So again, that goes back to number one, probably do twice as much due diligence as you think you need, especially if you're going into an industry you're not familiar with.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good point. Okay. Number five, Rod, you have to hold the line between being liked and being respected. Now, this was difficult for me because you were like truly an absentee owner, but I was a little bit more active, right? I would go in, not like, you know, I wouldn't spend a lot of time there, but I'd go check in. I'd spend, you know, an hour here or there at the spa, you know, kind of seeing what's going on and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And one of the challenges I had was that I went in there and felt like, hey, you know, these are mature enough people that we should be able to just have like a very friend-like relationship, right?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the attitude that I used. And going into those, you know, those relationships initially. Well, here's what happened, Rod. I got taken advantage of and manipulated at like every turn, right? So it really didn't work to try to be everybody's friend. And I realized really quickly that there does have to be a delineation between that being liked and being a friend to the people on your team, and also, you know, being the leader. Yeah. And I think that's the critical difference between the two.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's just what comes with leadership, right? You have to, you do want,
yeah, that's, you want to a be great
friend,
point.
You want to be friendly. You want to, you know, be able to call them your friends, you know, per se. And yet you still have to make the right decisions as it relates to the whole. And that doesn't always mean, you know, what each individual wants. In fact, you never make everybody happy in any decision you make, and you just have to be okay with that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And you're right. It is a across the board leadership principle. That's just a difficult thing that everybody has to go through.
Yep.
Okay. Number six, watch out for nepotism. I didn't really, this seems obvious too, right? Like, obviously we know that it's, you're kind of skating on thin ice anytime you've got family members working together.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, Rod, I was convinced of it not once, but twice.
Yeah.
So I'm putting it on here because I learned the hard way and allowed that situation to come about not just once, but twice. And here's the problem. It just never works out. It just never works out well.
Yeah. And especially when it's the manager over a group of people, and one of those people is their family member. It's just hard. It's just too difficult. Too many conflicts of interest, too many biases that just come into the picture, and it's just hard.
Yep. And that's exactly what happened. So yeah, watch out for nepotism. Okay. Number seven, Rod, only give people access to what they actually and absolutely need. Okay. Yes. So this is just painful. Gosh, Rod, we've been in the business, what, maybe three weeks or something? Maybe not.
Yeah,
even
it was,
maybe a
yeah.
week or 2 weeks. And we have in the spa world, we had a director, spa director, and then she or he would have like leads, mm-hmm. Lead over the aesthetic side and lead over the massage side, and they might have more leads depending on, you know, all the different, and a lead in the for the front end people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, three leads. Well, one of them is the massage therapist lead, and. And I have no idea how this happened, Rod. I have no idea. I still don't know how it happened. But again, I'd been there for like a week, and I get the lead coming to me. She calls me up, needs to set up a meeting, and she was furious that someone that we had hired after that was paid the same hourly rate as her. Okay, so. That happened once, and later we had another issue where a person was able to see some other compensation. And both times it was like people that were in some form of leadership. But
yeah.
Goodness, Roddy, it was so painful because once that happened, like it just kind of caused chaos, right? Now now in every situation, people are comparing this versus that. And anybody who's been through that hiring process knows that this is a sensitive issue. You have mm-hmm. to walk a line as it relates to it. But I learned the hard way that we needed to do it even better than we did, or needed to do it better. I don't know if we did it well, but we needed to do it better one way or another.
Yeah. And when you make hires, you make decisions based on the individual and the circumstances and whatnot. But it absolutely can have a trickle down effect, and you know, I have a, you know, someone that I respect that told me once, sharing and comparing how much you make with other people in your business, it's not good either way. If you find out that you're making less than someone that you feel like you should make at least as much as they do, pride kicks in, and you know, all of a sudden it becomes a bad situation. But the opposite can be true as well. You find out, oh, I'm making more than that person. therefore I'm better than they are, right?
And yeah, again, pride kicks in again.
Yep. And so it's
so there's no way to win on that.
Too tricky. Yep.
Okay. Okay. So the point here, and I think this could apply to a lot of other things too, right? Maybe you're talking about like more high level revenues, those kinds of things. Like you really do need to make sure and be thoughtful enough that people have access to what they need, but not in excess of what they need. Because generally speaking, that just causes confusion and frustration.
And in this case, it was a software thing that gave permissions at certain levels. And we just didn't know that. We needed to know who had access to what, and then we could handle it differently. But in this case, it backfired.
Okay, Rod, this is one that I didn't have. I really had nothing to do with this, thank goodness. But I'm going to let you talk a little bit about your challenges as it relates to this. Okay, so number 8, have a good payroll company.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. Now, okay. Tell me about your experience with our payroll company.
Yeah, okay. So we were using a PEO, and I can't tell you, I don't remember what that stands for, but basically it's that they take over the whole HR role, human resources role inside the firm. So they did process our payroll, but they were also doing all of our hiring. In fact, our people were technically employed by them, not directly by us.
Yeah, that's right.
And so everything, just the unemployment, everything else that has to do with payroll was all run through them inside of their system.
Well, and some of that was helpful and positive, right?
Yeah,
we didn't
absolutely
want to be directly involved. So like the system itself, the setup itself, I don't think was in and of itself wasn't problematic. In fact, right, there was a lot of things we liked about it.
Absolutely. It definitely came in and saved our bacon a little bit on, you know, when we were having different personnel types of issues that needed to be dealt with, and we could have them come in and handle those for us, and it was great. So specifically on the payroll, translating from what we were using to track people's hours, and then like you said, with the specialists, all of the different services that they could provide and what goes along with that, it's not that we didn't have a system and a process. It just was, well, with a lot of things, it was continually refined as we went.
Yeah, for sure.
But then translating that between where we were and into the payroll system and the group that we were working with, there were just always challenges and hitches, which are not fun. When you send out a check that is not correct, it's pandemonium. So
yeah, that it is problematic. So yes, and we learned more than once that if somebody doesn't get exactly what they're supposed to be paid, and usually, in fact, it's even worse than that. If they don't get paid more than what they thought that they should get paid, then it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
now I know that's kind of silly because like, but really there were, how many times are there people who wanted to talk to us about their pay, and more often than not, it was just right.
Turned out
just
it was accurate. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. However, those times when it's not, woo, there's hell to pay, Rod.
Yeah. And I'm sympathetic to that. Right. I mean, people have bills to pay and all that kind of thing. So I by no means am, you know, faulting anybody for you know,
and we were
not
quick
getting
to,
paid
what, to correct anything.
Yes, like we absolutely felt like that was a priority and did that. So,
okay, Rod, number 9, fire fast. Fire fast. I almost said the name of someone that I wish I had fired faster.
Oh, there's only one?
There was the first one that came to mind, but there was at least 3 that I can look back on and say, oh, wish I would have fired faster. Yeah. And now here's the thing. Firing is hard to do. And like you said, like we don't take this thing this lightly because it's a change in somebody's life. And so for that reason, firing and hiring are both difficult things, but particularly firing. There's probably, you know, very few things I've had to do over the years that I dislike less than firing people. Mm-hmm. However, for the sake of your company, which is another living entity, right? Mm-hmm. For the sake of your organization and your team, it is super critical to get people out fast that just don't fit. So it's kind of that, you know, cancer analogy. You have to clear it out as quick as you can, and if you don't, it'll spread like wildfire and become a huge problem.
And the often the way that translates is the bigger problem that you end up with is you lose the good people who aren't willing to stick around while you're hanging on to the people that you should have let go.
Yeah, that is a great point, because they don't want to put up with it, right?
Nope, if they're not going to, they don't have to.
Yeah, it's a great point. And that was the challenge that we were running across. But the issue was, Rod, that we were struggling to get the new people in, and so it was hard to let some of the maybe quote-unquote bad people, not bad people, bad situations. There's no bad people, just bad situations. Okay, so fire fast. Number 10, don't be overly reliant on any one person. And I think this is especially true, or especially challenging, maybe that's the better way to say it, especially challenging in a situation like ours where we were more or less absentee owners, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because again, the challenge is that when you get overly reliant on somebody, then they can kind of hold you hostage. And I felt like as the owner, there were at least a few times, not for very long, we usually fixed it pretty quick, but there was at least a few times where I felt like I was kind of being held hostage by our employees, by members of our team. And so, you know, going through that, I just realized that you can't be too reliant on any one person, because, you know, they can then hold you hostage.
This one might be the hardest one, because then the question is, well, what's the fix, right? How do you...
Yeah, what's the solution?
Yeah, because you have to be able to rely on people. And as a leader, as someone who's expecting good results from your team, you also have to be positive with them and have confidence in them, trust in them, etc. And so I think the solution is it's the way that you interact and the way that you set expectations and the amount of lenience that you give, for lack of a better word, toward, you know, different things that could happen. And so I think it comes back to processes and systems and checks inside of those processes and systems to so that there's accountability in multiple directions on these things.
Yeah, great point. Okay, Rod, number 11 and 12, we're going to hit on some of the positive things.
Hooray.
Believe it or not, despite how it sounds, there were at least a handful of things that we did well when we owned the spa, and we're going to talk about those for a second. At least a couple of them. So the first one is company culture. One of the things that we did well is we created a culture of people who generally liked being there, who liked each other, who wanted to thrive, who wanted to build, right? Mm-hmm. That piece wasn't the issue for us. The people that we brought in, for the most part, especially in the last half of the year. Now, here's the other thing. This is just for full disclosure here. We did own this in the middle of the pandemic. So we were in it about, a year before the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And we did have some really strong momentum going into it. And kind of that obviously blew up. And then we tried to get it back after, you know, after we were able to open back up and stuff. And made a lot of good strides, but ultimately we end up selling. So, okay, so back to the company culture. My experience is that people are happier, the business can be more profitable, and it runs more smoothly if you make a priority on keeping that company culture. And this kind of goes back to like the fire fast thing, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one element of keeping a great company culture. But I was proud of, for the most part, that we were able to have a strong culture that allowed us to be, generally successful.
And one thing I'll say about culture, it's not something that you can completely control. You know, all of the different people have personalities, especially as your leaders, your managers in the business, their personality carries through and helps define that culture and create that culture. And so you want to be proactive, and you want to be specific and purposeful in the things that you do to foster the kind of culture that, like you said, makes people want to be there every day. They come, yes, because it's a job and because they need to earn money, but because they enjoy the people around them. That makes a huge difference, and it can't be overstated.
So, Rod, you may have forgotten this. You may remember.
Okay.
But this is just one of those strange ironies that happened. We won the Best of Salt Lake. Yeah. So it was the best spa, Best in Salt Lake Spa. And I can't remember the publication, but it was like the main publication in the area, right? Yeah, that was doing that. And so a week before we sell it, we won Best of Salt Lake. So
we did.
The number 12 is reputation is everything. And that is one of the, and probably the thing we did the very best. If there was one thing that we really nailed, it was creating a reputation that drew more people into it. So when we first got, and really I'm thinking about things like Google reviews,
yeah.
And you know, we did video reviews, and anything that you could do to create a reputation of excellence, right? So that was the one thing that I thought that we did really well. And the difference was that early on, we had to spend more money to get people into the spa. And as we continued on, especially as we came out of the pandemic, right before we sold the business, we were seeing more and more people coming in, but just because they had, you know, looked us up on Google, they saw the awesome reviews that we had been gathering. And by doing that, like, it was just everything became easier across the board.
Absolutely. I was going to say night and day difference. What's interesting is that the Google reviews, when we got there, it's not like it was horrendous. It was still...
Right. We were sitting at like a 4.3 on Google, which, you know, you wouldn't say that that's bad.
Yeah. But we were able to grow that up to, what, we ended up 4.6? Did we get to 4.7?
4.7.
Yeah, 4.7.
We ended up at 4.7, and it was like a barrage of just doing the right thing for people. And we actually asked people for Google reviews. Mm-hmm. We kind of talked about this concept on one of our, you know, the how to get a business off the ground fast episode.
Yep.
And focused on Google reviews. But like, I probably should mention just that alone, because if you own a business, Google's everything. It just doesn't matter. You've got to get Google reviews. And the key to it is actually asking, because most people won't leave a review, or at least they won't leave a positive review generally, unless they're asked. People are happy to leave a negative review. And here's the thing. I know that from my own experience. I don't think about leaving reviews for businesses most of the time. However, and I'm not really a review leaver. However, there have been, when I do consider doing it, it's when I'm thinking, oh man, that experience was awful, and I want to let the world know about it because I'm furious. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
yeah, and anyway. if we weren't as proactive, because there were some really strange experiences. I'm thinking about the person that came in and didn't even have a service, but just they were like drunk or something. Anyway, it was a no-win experience for anybody involved. But then they went and left a review, and it's like, where has that come from? Someone who's never even experienced our business,
and
they have horrible things to say. But in the end, or in the long run, that doesn't matter if you're gathering those other positive reviews and on a regular basis, all the time. So,
okay, Rod, those were the 12 that we listed. I think if I sat down and like thought about this for like another hour or two, I could probably come up with another dozen of them. But our hope is that the lessons that we learned and the things that we did that we didn't do well, and maybe a couple things that we did do well, will be helpful to any of you who are considering starting, buying a business, or even already own and run.
Yeah, right in the middle of it, yep.
Okay, Rodney, with that said, we're going to call it a day. Thanks, everybody, for listening to today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, visit moneyinsights.net.